Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
And we're refocusing our efforts on our two core projects. The first and foremost priority is removing 2 million gallons per day of treated effluent from the Blackwater River, period. We have a deadline. It is mandated. It is obligatory. We do not have a choice. That clock is ticking and it's driving our efforts.
Now, I misled you ever so slightly. And the misleading is simply this, that in this particular portion of this episode of Milton City Council Melodrama Theater, there's not a lot of melodrama. I know. You might be wondering, but this is how I always introduce Milton City Council moments. And at the, not last night's budget meeting, but at the prior Milton City Council, I think this was work session. Yeah, the work session. You had Ed Spears, who is now the actual city manager. You know, Randy Jorgensen has now retired. He says it's for the final time. He's not coming back no matter what. But Ed Spears actually spent quite a bit of time talking about the wastewater treatment plant project and the project to remove the effluent, treated effluent. Effluent, if you're not familiar, is just the term we use for wastewater that has been processed to a certain standard. And typically when people say effluent, what they mean is water that is safe to be sprayed on grass. Not, it, layman's terms, it'd be okay to drink, but it's not treated to a standard that would, you know, officially be usable for potable water, okay? It's actually very, very clean, but, you know, it's not to the exact same standard as treated as water that you would drink. Anyway, there's a very famous act like a couple of years ago where Randy Jorgensen went and drank the effluent from the wastewater treatment plant downtown Milton to prove that it is perfectly safe, you know, but you think of treated effluent, you know, that's what you tell. Well, I mean, you know, it's the water that goes into the river. Or if you're in, as, you know, Santa Rosa County or Scambia County, there's water that goes into the various sounds. Or, you know, that's, they don't, you know, some of it is sprayed, some of it is put into rapid infill basins, some of it is pumped into other waterways because it's very, very, very clean. Well, in Milton, the water out of the wastewater treatment plant currently goes into the Blackwater River. And there is a mandate by the Florida Department of Environmental Protection that they stop doing that, not because they're doing anything wrong, but because the salt water mix in with the black water has moved north far enough that the salt water is starting to encroach on the area where they discharge the effluent. And I forget the reason why now, but I think it has something to do with impacting the treatment plant itself. In any case, because of the salt water shift, they're having to move the effluent from being discharged into the river to being discharged into somewhere else. And so we have two projects. Build a new wastewater treatment plant that is not in a floodplain and is hopefully far enough away from anything that'd be easy enough to dispose of the water, but also build a pipeline temporarily to get the water from the existing wastewater treatment plant to a different location that is not the Blackwater River. These are the two projects. Project number one, move the water away from the Blackwater River where it currently is discharged 2 million gallons a day, pipeline to spray fields. Project number two, build the wastewater treatment plant.
Those are the two core projects, and there are three elements that make up those projects. Number one is the effluent pipeline. It takes the treated effluent from our current downtown plant to the disposal area. That's the second aspect, the effluent disposal system. Those two together make up the effluent removal project. The third aspect is the new plant itself.
Yeah, and I love that he got this kind of in a very simple way to understand. Of course, he wanted to make, There's been this big, long fight for years now with the Save the Blackwater people who were started by what I not as lovingly called the Pitchfork Posse. These are people who, some of them anyway, live right on Cooper's Basin, which is right by the proposed plant site for the new wastewater treatment plant, which will not be on the river. It will be near the river. It will not discharge into the river in any way. But this is the thing that these people have been upset about for years and years. I think misrepresenting a lot of the truth about this project because they don't want it in their backyard, which is its own interesting thing. But they have been fighting this project tooth and nail ever since. Some telling the truth, some lying. Lots of drama at city council meetings and Santa Rosa County Commission meetings. But what Ed is saying is, look, the Sprayfield project that we have right now meets all of the required standards. Another kind of general allegation is that the projects don't meet standards or violating rules. The EPA is upset about this, whatever.
Our Sprayfield project meets all local and state requirements, period. It meets all local and state requirements, period. We would not have permits otherwise.
That's why you have permits. And by the way, if you look on a map, and I know it's hard to do maps on the radio, but the wastewater treatment plant is basically downtown Milton, south of the main, like south of Highway 90. There's kind of an open area to the south of most of the development there. And the pipeline goes due east across the river, and then it bends north, I don't know, a mile or two east, and then it wanders its way around some properties and ends up close to the site of the proposed wastewater treatment plant. I'd say proposed. It's going to be built there, okay? Almost certainly. I know the Save the Blackwater people think that it's not, but, you know, I would say almost certainly it's going to be built there. And then there's a series of storage areas, because if you do spray fields instead of rapid infill basins, you have to provide for 3 days' worth of storage in case everything goes wrong. So there's an intermediate storage area to the east, and then there's spray fields even to the east of that. This is all north of, like, the jail, if you want to think of that. It's kind of the roughly the area north and east of the sheriff's office and all of that. And one of the things that had come up was the allegation that there was this letter from FDEP that expressed some concerns about PFAS, you know, the forever chemicals, or so-called forever chemicals, and, you know, how those were going to be an issue. And Ed Spears clarified that the letter FDEP sent didn't have anything to do with that. It had to do with basically a computational error that the city had made that was only just letting them know they had made the error. It didn't really have anything of the sort to warn people about the project.
Briefly to discuss the letter we received from FDEP in the Wellfield Protection District. Contrary to media reports, FDEP did not express any concerns in their letter. It clearly stated twice in their letter, once on page one, once on page two, that there are no standards for PFAS and PFOS for raw sewage or treated effluent at this time. And at this time, it's very important. We expect those to come down the line. And when they do, the estimate that I have to treat 2 million gallons per day of treated effluent down to the drinking water standards is going to be about $10.8 million.
So remember that the EPA has come out with standards for treating drinking water for PFAS, the extraordinarily expensive carbon filtration systems that have to reduce it down to, I'm going on memory now, but I believe it's 3 parts per trillion. It's an incredibly low number. In fact, the standard is set at the level where we can detect that there's stuff there. So they're saying if you can detect it, it's too high. And we've talked with Bruce Woody of ECUA about what they're doing. Every water provider anywhere in the country is having to deal with the high expense of detecting if there's PFAS in various water sources and then filtering it before it gets to your drinking water. What he's talking about is after it becomes wastewater, you know, it goes into your house, it goes in your toilet, you flush it, now it's wastewater. It goes back to some wastewater treatment plant, and then it gets treated to become effluent. There is no standard from the EPA for either the level of PFAS in the wastewater effluent, nor is there any standard for anything else that would come out of the wastewater treatment plant, you know, solids, for example, that they also produce. And they're saying they expect that to come, and when that comes, it's going to be about $10 million, and they're, you know, planning for that. But that's a future thing, and that's not a standard that's been set yet, and there's no deficiency in their plan.
FDEP did not identify any deficiency whatsoever in the city's wastewater operations, and they did not request us to do anything.
At the same time, as I say, the sort of, say, the Blackwater River folks, the Pitchfork Posse folks, have been, anytime there's anything that they can even remotely throw up as an objection against the wastewater treatment plant, they do it. And one of the objections now is that you have these spray fields where the effluent's going to be sprayed on the ground and then eventually work its way into the soil and down. They say these things are in the well field protection area. You've heard this term a lot in Santa Rosa County. And you cannot have bad stuff in the well field protection area. And Ed Spears says, well, yeah, generally correct, but the well field protection area is not a no spray area. The well field protection area specifically allows for spray fields. It was a contemplated use in the way the well field protection area ordinance was written.
For the well field protection overlay district, it specifically addresses wastewater treatment and effluent disposal. This is important to note. It specifically addresses them. It does not ban them. It does not prohibit them. It contemplated these uses inside the well field protection area. Otherwise, they wouldn't have this clause here if they didn't think this could happen here. And they wanted to do two things. One, you have to meet FDEP standards. And number two, reuse claim water that has received high-level disinfection is allowed when permitted under Part 3, Chapter 62-610. Our spray field permit from FDEP states exactly that we have to meet those standards.
And so they do, or at least that, you know, that's what's coming out of the plant now. That's the intended what will come out of the new wastewater treatment plant when it gets built. The spray field, again, the need for the spray field now is because they're going to shift the 2 million gallons coming off of the existing wastewater treatment plant to a new location, not going into the Blackwater River, which it currently does. And in order to do that, they have to have these spray fields. These spray field has to be permitted. There has to be treated water. It has to meet all the standards, and it does. And even though these spray fields are in, or some of them, I think all of them, but at least some of them are in the well field protection area, that's allowed. That's part of the ordinance to allow that.
I'd also like to point out what our sister government at Santa Rosa County is building at the Milton Interchange Park. They're building a 250,000 gallon per day wastewater treatment plant and rapid infiltration wetlands at the park in the heart of the Milton Wellfield Protection Area.
In other words, if you're upset about the spray field being in the Wellfield Protection Area, then the county is doing the same exact thing. And so he's saying they're doing it because it's legal, because it's safe, because it's a contemplated and allowed use. So are we. But yet the people who are objecting to this plan are not objecting to it because it's actually wrong or a violation of ordinance or because they're consistent and they're also protesting at the county. They're objecting because they're the sort of NIMBY or misinformed or Save Our Blackwater folks who just, you know, they want to throw up any objection that they can possibly throw up. And he's saying, look, the county is specifically allowing this.
For the Wellfield Protection Overlay District, it specifically addresses wastewater treatment and effluent disposal. This is important to note. It specifically addresses them. It does not ban them. It does not prohibit them. It contemplated.
Oh, I think I replayed that one. I'm so sorry. This is the one I meant to play. This is about the email that they got from the county and Sean Ward saying, yes, specifically, this is fine.
We have an email from January from Mr. Sean Ward, the Development Services Director for Santa Rosa County, advising us that reuse permitted under Part 3, Chapter 62-610 will not, I didn't put the capitals there, he did, in his email, will not require a variance from Santa Rosa County. It is an allowable use meeting those requirements. End of quote.
And so the county is building a wastewater treatment plant and spray fields and ribs in the well field protection area because that's allowed. Not only that, but the location of where they're building it is actually right in the middle of a cluster of water wells.
You notice there's a red dot right there. That's where they're building not just a disposal area, but a wastewater treatment plant. You notice the stars. Each one of those is a well. They surround the county's brand new wastewater treatment plant and disposal area.
Exactly, because this is a perfectly allowable use.
This is the plant location. Notice these red arrows. If you can't read that, it says single family residence. These are homes. These are where people live. Directly adjacent to this industrial park and a new wastewater treatment plant and rapid infiltration wetlands.
Okay, so why is he going through all this? Why am I going through all of this? Well, one, because it's information that people don't necessarily have, and it's good to understand what the state of a good project is. Number two, because people get worried because they hear treated effluent is going into the wellfield protection area, and they're worried about, well, there's no standards for PFAS treatment for the effluent that's going into those areas. That's right. There's no standard for that doesn't exist. So we are complying with all known regulations, and we're planning for the future when we might have to comply with any regulation on the level of PFAS and those things. And so what these people, what the critics are saying is, well, you just don't know how bad it's going to be. You don't know how significant this problem is. And so we shouldn't be even taking a risk of spraying it in these areas. And what Ed is saying is two parts. Number one, we're complying with all the current known rules. We're planning for the future changes in the rules. And if you're really upset about this, why aren't you also at the county protesting the exact same thing that they're doing? Meaning, why are you hypocrites? You're just here because you're angry about this plant led by a group of people who's angry that it's going to be close to their backyard, even though not exactly really, and they've been doing this for years and getting worked up and bent out of shape over nothing. So that's kind of the premise. There's more coming. There's more coming. Like all Milton City Council Melodrama Theater episodes, there's always more coming. 526 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
As a mom, comforting my family is what I do best. Vicks VapoStick provides soothing, non-medicated Vicks Vapors in an easy-to-apply stick. And it dries fast, so there's no mess. I use it to comfort myself and my family.
Thanks, Mom.
Vicks VapoStick. Soothing comfort for the whole family. And when you need more comfort for yourself, try Vicks VapoShower Max for steamy Vicks Vapors.
Use as directed. VapoStick for use ages 4 and up. VapoShower Max use for adults only.
Hi, I'm Ron Helms, and I'm running to be your next county commissioner in District 4. I'm a long-term business owner, military veteran, and ordained clergy. As a fiscal conservative and Second Amendment supporter, I have a passion for public service with strong community engagement. As your next county commissioner, I will have a strong impact on crime and gun violence, affordable housing, and combating high insurance rates. I'm asking for your support and your vote on November 5th.
Paid for by Ron Helms, Democrat County Commission, District 4.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer whenever I want?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. 94% of Sleep Number smart sleepers report better sleep. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, during our biggest sale of the year, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. To find a store near you, visit sleepnumber.com.
News Radio 92.3 gets you live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Captain, how soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me I'm a doctor.
No, I mean I'm just not sure.
Or can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
Good morning, 529 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. The U.S. charging 6 Hamas leaders with terrorism and other crimes related to the October 7th attack in Israel. Yesterday, the Justice Department announced the 6 defendants were identified by the FBI as some of the leaders of Hamas, including the group's political head, Yahya Sinwar. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly.
And three of them are dead. Right? Three of the six are already dead. Which is, I think, one of the weirdest things about this is we're charging dead people now. So, you know, anyway, it's weird.
It's a different strategy.
Yeah. Go get them.
An official trial date now set for two defendants in the Matthew Perry death case. They've scheduled a March 2025 joint trial for their role in the death of Perry. The two who are accused of supplying him with the drugs that led to his overdose are due back in court later today for a status hearing.
All right. Thanks so much, Dave. At 5:30 here on News Radio 92.3, Taste of Gulf Breeze comes up Friday, October 4th. So 1 month away, annual food festival. Good time. It is a 21-up event only because there's a lot of alcohol and there's a lot of alcohol and it's fun. Did I mention there's a lot of alcohol? But it is a lot of fun.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Vice President Harris visits New Hampshire today to pitch a small business tax plan. The VP wants to expand from $5,000 to $50,000 in tax incentives for small business startup expenses. The goal is to spur 25 million new small business applications over 4 years. The big debate, the vice president and the former president next Tuesday in Philadelphia. It's Donald Trump who's in the battleground state tonight, taking questions from the public in Harrisburg.
Former President Trump will participate in a Fox News town hall in Pennsylvania. The first of several swing state appearances, which also includes stops in North Carolina and Wisconsin.
The event begins at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fox's Hannity. That's Fox's Rich Edson. Michigan judge rules Robert F. Kennedy Jr. must stay on the November presidential ballot. He's trying to take his name off the ballot in battleground state since leaving the race and endorsing Donald Trump. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. It's 77 degrees right now in Pensacola. We've got partly cloudy skies this morning. Well, it was a busy Labor Day weekend at the Pensacola Airport. More than 5,000 departing passengers going through over the weekend.
I think we've had a really good summer. You know, the airport's been up 15% in passengers each of the last 2 years, so the numbers are really good.
And that's Todd Payne, assistant airport director. He says, though, while the number of passengers was good over the weekend, it didn't top some of the other summer weekends, which are more of Pensacola's peak travel season. Alan, a military special forces veteran arrested on child sexual abuse charges as he was getting off an airplane at the Pensacola airport last weekend. The Walton County Sheriff's Office says 42-year-old Brendan Souter had groomed and abused a child he met through competitive shooting competitions over the course of the last several years. Deputies had served a search warrant at his home in Walton County days earlier. They say evidence was collected there that gave probable cause for his arrest. The U.S. Marshals assisted with that arrest due to Souter's background and firearms training. He now faces charges including lewd and lascivious battery and molestation of a child, child abuse, and having sex with a victim between 16 and 17 years old. He's being held in the Escambia jail and pending extradition back to Walton County. Marco Rubio worried that China is getting access to our cutting-edge chip technology. Rubio yesterday citing a New York Times story that an advanced chip smuggling operation has ties to China's military. He sent a letter to the Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo to call on the Biden-Harris administration to do more to secure chip technology. He wrote that the semiconductors have widespread military applications and can provide militaries with an edge on the battlefield. And a plan now to produce more nursing students across the state of Florida, showing results. That from Governor Ron DeSantis yesterday. He spoke at Daytona State College. He was celebrating the pipeline and line funds, which are meant to enhance the nursing talent pipeline across the state. The governor said he recently approved $130 million for the programs in the upcoming state budget. In the last 3 years, the number of students that are enrolled in nursing programs at schools that get line funding is up 25%. And SpaceX now preparing for a couple of launches this week. The company says they're planning to send a batch of Starlink satellites into orbit tomorrow. Liftoff for that plan just before 8 a.m. at Cape Canaveral. And the Polaris Dawn mission with another delay, and crews are now hoping to get off the ground for that mission on Friday evening. It is 5:34, News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We will be seeing some scattered showers and thunderstorms through the day today. 70% chance of rain. High near 85 degrees. Low overnight near 71. For Thursday, 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms. High near 84. Thursday night temperatures dropping near 73. High rain chances for Friday with a 90% chance of rain and a high near 84. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 77 in Pensacola, 77 in Gulf Breeze, and it's a bit cooler, 72 reported in Milton. Our next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
Is your home your dream home? Or does it at least have the potential to be your dream home? Maybe you need to make a change. Maybe you just need new appliances. If that's the case, you need to check out Topps Appliance in Milton. Locally owned and operated, Topps Appliance has just what you need to turn your home into your dream home. Top-of-the-line freezers, refrigerators, dishwashers, stoves, plus washer and dryer combos. Topps Appliance carries the name brands that you know and trust, including GE, Hotpoint, Speed Queen, and so much more. And they have a full installation and service department, something the big box stores just don't offer. They also keep most items in stock so you can take it home today. Turn your ordinary home into your dream home with an appliance upgrade from Topps Appliance. Highway 90 in Milton, just east of Stewart Street.
Join Robbie Mott from Trek Bicycle Store Pensacola Friday at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Robbie will be sharing his years of expertise on cycling, how to select your perfect bike, best maintenance practices, on and off-road safety, plus the accessories you may need to provide you with the best overall biking experience. Trek Bicycle Store Pensacola on Pep Talk.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Join Jim's Firearms for a 10th anniversary celebration on September 20th and 21st. They're partnering with local favorites like Badass Coffee, Key Nutrition, and more for an unforgettable event. Indulge in delicious food from La Casita Food Truck and 850 Barbecue. But that's not all. They're having numerous firearm raffles with all proceeds benefiting the Save Underdogs Foundation. Stop by Jim's Firearms at the corner of Sorrento Road and Blue Angel Parkway, September 20th and 21st, to celebrate a decade of community support. Online at jimsfirearms.net.
Tomorrow night is the home opener for UWF Argo football right here on News Radio 92.3. The game begins at 6 p.m. UWF Argo football is presented by Pennair Credit Union, Bogey's Golf Suites, and ECUA. Then beginning September 21st, catch all UWF Argo football home and away on our sister station ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
Good morning, 538 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Yesterday, we had a good chance to talk to Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. Good to have you with us. Let's start with this, because even though it's maybe not the highest profile crime, it is one that we did not get a chance to talk about last week, and I thought it was such a weird and interesting one that I wanted to ask you about it. Apparently, people are using trucks to steal ATMs, but they steal the truck in order to steal the ATM, and then other things happen after that, right? There's actually a case, but it's not just a single incident, right?
Well, in this particular time, it was a single incident. Last year, we had a rash. We had about three or four of these.
Okay.
But as you pointed out, we have individuals that go through, typically go through used truck lots, and then they'll steal a rather large truck using an F-250, something, a one-ton type pickup trucks. Because their intent is to drive it through the front window of a convenience store and then either pull out the ATM with a chain or actually ram through it and where the ATM is and then knock it off of its base or foundation. So that's what happened last week. I think last week or so, we had a truck stolen, and I saw the video from the inside, the surveillance video, and the three people in the car or the truck, and then it runs into the front window, the glass doors and the glass windows around it. They take them two or three times to get through the window and the door, and then the ATM is right there next to it. So two people get out of the car or the truck while the driver stays in the truck. They wrap a rope around it, and then they get in the truck and they pull this thing off. We found the truck, and we found remnants of the ATM, not the money part, but the remnants of this ATM a couple hours later. And we're working on it. We're investigating it. The reason I mentioned it is a one-time thing is because we haven't had any since last year. Last year, we had a rash. It was a group of people coming through like the southeast, and they would steal trucks in, let's say, Mobile, and they do this. And they come to Pensacola, then they go to Panama City, and then they go to Tallahassee.
So they had a pattern. They were a crew. Basically.
It was a crew, yeah. Okay. And the same people were going through stealing trucks.
As far as we know, Nicolas Cage was not involved.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Stay
all right,
tuned.
Fair enough. Go on.
Made for TV. But anyways, that's what they did this time. So we were watching a lot of our truck stores and stuff over the last couple of days, just to, in case that they're, because they did this every couple, 2-3 days in the past. And we weren't sure if it was this traveling group or if it was some locals that are doing it. And we're still investigating it, but we haven't had one since then.
And as you say, a lot of times it's because, you know, used car places are, for understandable reasons, are sometimes not particularly tight in their key security, you know, for just convenience reasons, right? Mm-hmm. So those are trucks that are more easily taken. What I don't understand is, so convenience stores that I've seen these days, maybe it's not all of them, typically have the bollards like in front, which I assume is for exactly this reason, is to prevent somebody from driving in and breaking in and taking the money or whatever it is. I guess this one didn't have that, or it did have that and they worked around it.
I watched the video, and I haven't been to the store itself.
Sure.
But it seemed as if they must not have had it right there in front of the window and the door, front door. And so the truck must have went right through it.
And
appeared to go right through it.
On an ATM, like, once you get the device, you still got to get the money out of the device.
Yeah,
that's hard.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert in ATMs, but there's a cartridge, if you will, where they put the money in. And a lot of the ATM is the base and the foundation, and then there's the digital part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what they once they get the ATM, then they have to do some cutting and some prying, and unless they have the key.
Yeah.
And then they get this cartridge out. And then what we found, again, was the outside of the ATM, where they obviously had pried out the money portion.
You know, it seems to me, and I know this is not your area exactly, but it just seems to me like this could be stopped with, I don't know, Dipax or something that would be, you know, if the machine got bumped too heavily, you know, you've got a tilt on the ATM. Basically, it seems like this could be thwarted.
Well, I think some of the locations have, because of this, placed the ATM in different parts of the store.
Mm-hmm.
So put them in the back of the store, because it shouldn't matter to the customer. I'm not I'm not a marketing genius, but if you need money, you go to one door, you go to the back of the store. It doesn't matter to me.
By the bathroom, by the cigarettes, doesn't matter, right?
To get that out. I mean, unless you have a big long chain. But even then, it's going to be much more difficult. So I'm assuming there's some sort of a scouting the place out.
Yeah.
And so, again, we're going back and looking videos and seeing who might have been looking around.
And again, I know this might not be something you know, but do you even have a rough idea of how much money is usually in an ATM? I mean, my own guess would be somewhere in the... I mean, it might be $10,000, but I wouldn't think it'd be much more than that. It might be less. Am I in the ballpark, do you think?
Yeah, usually we don't give up how much people can make.
Well, here's why I ask.
I'll tell you this, no more than that.
Okay. Well, and here's why I ask. The damage to the store is more than what's in the ATM. It's like stealing copper out of a house. They're doing way more damage than the stuff is worth, which is like, now I'm paying higher insurance rates because the Circle K gets knocked over for the ATM that's not even worth the cost of the damage to the structure.
Yeah, but I think you're being reasonable. These are criminals, and they don't care about other people's property. They'll steal a truck worth $40,000, $50,000, $60,000.
Right.
And then they'll get damage it.
They'll damage it to probably more than what's in the ATM.
Yeah. And it's 10 times more than what they're going to get from the ATM. But they don't care about other people. They don't care about working people. They're criminals.
Well, that's why I wanted to tell the story, because I think it's an interesting crime that I had not heard much about otherwise, and some of the details that you and I talked about off the air last week, and also just the sheer stupidity of it in the scheme of economics, right? How it's just a crazy, crazy crime. Now to things that have been a little bit more high profile, another machete crime, which I still don't understand how many people must own machetes, but okay, it's a bad thing.
Well, I would tell you that I've been in law enforcement a long time, and I don't know that I ever recall as many machete uses in criminal activities. In the last probably 2 years or so, we've had more stabbings and machetes. I don't know if that's because they can't get their hands on guns as easy as they could before. I don't know. But, yes, we had this situation where it was a domestic dispute, and a gentleman by the name of Roderick Lewis arrived in a silver Jeep. He exited the Jeep armed with a machete and threatened both of the victims that were at that scene. Again, this was on Empire. So the very next day, our deputies obviously knew a suspect in the vehicle. They saw one of our deputies, again, keenly aware of his surroundings, saw that silver Jeep, try to stop it. This one was driven by a lady named Crystal Sorrell, but Lewis was in the passenger side, and we wanted him for this aggravated assault that happened the day before. Tried to stop it. Jeep didn't stop. We had to do a pit maneuver. Worked wonderfully. Lewis gets out of the passenger side, runs. We catch him in a backyard somewhere. And then we arrest her for fleeing and looting as well. So both of them are arrested. We put a little picture of them if you're curious as to who these type of people are.
Yeah.
That would do this sort of thing. They're on our social media platforms and a little bit.
I wouldn't invite them over for dinner.
Yeah,
well, I'll put it that way. I wouldn't invite them over for dinner.
Well, so. Knowing their background, I would.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe just if I see them and we strike up a conversation. But, yeah. You guys also, let's see, you've closed down another drug house or two even. I think one on Leadbetter, but also maybe a second one. Is that right, in the last week?
Yeah. I keep telling everyone that our narcotics unit is doing a jam-up job. This is in addition to our partnerships with our federal and state partners. And these are the drug houses that we kick the door, we knock on the door, we kick the door and we close it down, put a sign out there so people know, because our concern is the people that are trying to buy drugs, they're driving by and they realize, hey, how you do with a convenience store? Is this place open? Is it closed? What is the deal? And the sign helps them to know to go somewhere else. This place is closed. Obviously, I say that in jest, but that's what happens and that's what the neighborhood typically likes to see. At times they're out there applauding. At times, the people who live there are trying to argue with us as we're taking drugs out of their house that they're not a drug house. But, that's their business.
Neighbors usually know, or at least suspect, and it's nice to see the cops do the job, right?
Yeah, they certainly suspect it.
Yeah.
Because we get calls from neighbors all the time. And a lot of times neighbors don't come out there and tell us, I told you about this, or brag about it. But they're glad. And we get phone calls and texts all the time. Thank you for cleaning this up. Again, even if it's temporary, it gives the neighborhood a chance to recover. It's like, you solve this one problem and then hopefully someone else will move in, or hopefully, while the drug dealer is in jail, they stop selling there altogether.
Right.
And we're not naive enough to think that happens all the time. But we know that every time we kick a door in, it makes that neighborhood just a little bit better.
Right. At least for a time. And, sometimes that's the best you got and you do that.
And then ultimately we're going to do our best to make sure that we're starting writing letters to, there's two avenues. One is code enforcement avenue and then one is the nuisance avenue, which is by statute, the sheriff can write a letter. And I've written a couple of letters. My legal team has written letters. I've signed them.
Yeah.
Saying that, I'm declaring your house a nuisance because there's people dealing drugs here. And then ultimately, it's a long process. It's convoluted. I almost wish that the state legislature would take a look at this. If you do a couple of drug search warrants there, maybe give the county, not necessarily the sheriff's office, kind of a little more leeway in the speed at which they can declare that a nuisance.
Sort of an accelerated pathway for known violators. That maybe that would happen.
If it's known. Yeah. And I'm not talking about, if your grandson's
or something,
dealing
right.
drugs at your house, they take your house. I'm not there. Where I'm at is if you knew or should have known time and time and time again, this house on Talladega comes to mind. We've been there, 30, 40 times.
Oh God.
There's been overdoses there, search warrants there. And now we had a homicide there. That's a nuisance.
I had a listener ask a question that I didn't know the answer to, which is, of course, why I would ask you, wanted me to ask you. So they live in a covenant community, an HOA, and there are signs posted at the very front, no soliciting.
Right.
They also have signs on their property, no soliciting. Nevertheless, as you would expect, people come and knock on their door all the time. And they just wanted to know, what legal remedy do they have? Should they call you? What can you do? I was suspicious that this was probably just a trespass and therefore you guys would have to be there and observe and move them off the property. But that's why I wanted to ask you, because I wasn't sure. What legal power, for example, do the no soliciting signs have? And then what legal remedy is there to stop this, if there is any?
Yeah, there's no real authority and no soliciting in your neighborhoods. It is, as you mentioned, a trespass issue. And we either have to be there and you have to say, hey, don't come back. You can even, in addition to that, you can have a no trespassing sign on there. And if someone comes on your property, we still have to have you telling them to leave. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no trespassing is...
Oh, that's interesting. So like posted no trespassing doesn't really accomplish much. You still need to have... them being told, or you need to observe the violation and the owner.
It does the second time. If we get there and we say, okay, Andrew McKay, you've got to get off this person's property. Mm-hmm. We will put your name on our list, or dispatcher will have
repeat.
That.
Okay.
The next time a deputy gets there, they don't necessarily have to have the owner's permission.
I gotcha.
Now,
okay.
Because they've given you that authority, and it usually lasts about a year.
Okay.
Those types of things.
But basically, yes, call you. Because yes. You guys have the ability to trespass them off the property, but
well,
that's
they
kind
have
of
to be there.
But they have to be there for that to be there. Yeah, and if they've gone onto the next house.
Yeah. And I know it's frustrating. And a lot of times, honestly, a lot of times political candidates would do this. They'll just walk onto a door and they'll knock on it and they'll say no soliciting.
Yeah.
And I when I was running, I told them we're not going to do that.
It's, yeah.
No soliciting.
The sheriff
no
doesn't want to show up
we're
where
not
people gonna, tell him not to
not
come and
there, yeah.
risk being trespassed.
Well, I don't think it's cool.
Right. Yeah, agreed.
If they don't
agreed.
Want you there, don't go there. I don't care who you are.
Right.
I guess the list is
not
the
everybody
people.
Goes by the it's not cool policy. It's kind of weird.
It needs to be the statute.
I like that. Write that into law. Football games
over
the weekend
go
well?
We had a lot of work. Yeah, everything went very well. The night games, I'm not sure who won these games, but I can tell you that from our perspective, I didn't get a single text that there was trouble at any of the high school
no
football games.
No chick fights in the street out in front of the school?
No. Longleaf was clear
okay,
this weekend.
Good.
And even the youth football.
One
I know
week incident free.
Change. Yeah, well, at least one week. And here's the thing. Most weeks are incident-free. But whenever
right.
something happens, it
That's
really
true.
Blows up on social media. But I know there was a move, one of the youth football games from Bellevue to Inslee. We put some of our cameras up there. There was no issues to report there either.
Very good. Last thing, you have an award ceremony today. I always love your quarterly awards because I, as a news guy, get to hear stories about good deeds and life-saving that don't normally necessarily make it into the paper or on TV or in radio. And so I like to focus on that. But it's a neat thing.
Well, Escambia is a pretty big county, and a lot of stuff goes on. We have tremendous employees. The men and women at the sheriff's office do a fantastic job every day, really. And this gives us a chance. And the reason we have them quarterly is because we do such a great job. And this is our chance to say, hey, thank you. You've saved a life here. You affected the community here. You did a great job. Sometimes it is, you know, you've been there for 20 years or 25 years. Mm-hmm. And we just want to say thank you. So today at 2:00, we'll have our quarterly award ceremony. And like you said, you'll get to hear, you know, some of the background of some stuff you may have heard, but you didn't hear about
the detail,
about all the detail mm-hmm. and all the good stuff. You know, unless we have a deputy, you know, going under a storm drain, you usually don't get that information until later on.
Right. Sheriff Chip Simmons, as always, sir, thank you for the time. Thanks for what you do. And we'll talk to you again next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.
5:52 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. This is supposed to happen today. I, of course, cannot say whether it is happening yet, but theoretically, on US 29 going to I-10, you know, that big interchange that is under massive reconstruction for $250 million, and it's still not going to really be fixed when they get done, but it'll be better, theoretically. You know how the northbound 29 to eastbound I-10 ramp has been closed and is going to be closed? Okay, that may never reopen, by the way, just so you kind of are prepared for that. But all that traffic is going north to Broad Street, making a U-turn and coming back and taking the on-ramp of despair. You know, that right hand, but then you bend left and you go into the eastbound 10 on the inside lanes, right? Which is better than it used to be, but still not good. Okay, well, that also is going away. So if you are in any way trying to get on eastbound 10 from 29, you're now going to use a temporary detour route, which is... as I have had it described to me not that long ago, maybe even as early as yesterday, as recent as yesterday, was still just a dirt mound going up to the interstate. So I'm hoping that's not still the case. But if that does happen today, as it is apparently supposed to happen today, just be prepared that probably anything going on to eastbound I-10 is going to be, a hot mess all day and probably for a while. The good news is this will all be over soon because the project is done in 2030. So there's that. No word on when that particular slice of the project will be done, but then again, I think a lot of these timelines are sort of, you know, they're like, whose line is it anyway? You know, the points are made up and they don't matter anyway. I think it's kind of how that works. Hey, if you're getting work done, electrical work, heating, air conditioning, plumbing, you know, anything like that inside of your home, Peden Heating, Electrical, Plumbing, Air Conditioning, they will take care of you. They, of course, have been around for 55 years. They're celebrating their 55th anniversary. And any company that's around that long, you know, they do something right. And in this case, they do bunches of things right. They started in Panama City. They have been building a territory west and east. And now, they, of course, they've been in Pensacola for a long time, east all the way to Tallahassee, and everywhere in between. And in the last couple of years, they've expanded west over into Baldwin County and then over the water into Mobile County just this year. Given it's their 55th anniversary, they've got some specials going on right now. And the big one is that because we're getting towards the end of air conditioning season, you know, as we're starting to have temperatures drop off, well, they have surplus stuff in stock. And if they have an air conditioning system in stock and you need an air conditioning system, $1,000 off right now. So trying to clear out the inventory for AC season, $1,000 off any in-stock air conditioning system. You know, make sure to get your system serviced, your air conditioning system serviced for this fall so that you're all prepared the next time spring comes around. You don't have to really think about it. Peden, PEADEN.com.
At the height of hurricane season, are you sure your data is backed up? I'm Nathan with Data Revolution, and this is your cybersecurity tip of the month. Hurricanes can cause severe damage to buildings and IT infrastructure. Test your backups now to ensure your access in an emergency. Businesses along the Gulf Coast trust Data Revolution for their cybersecurity and communications needs. Visit datarevs.com for more information.
This is a test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test.
I'm Claire Stewart with the University of West Florida. The UWF Historic Trust will be hosting their Open House and Community Day on Saturday, September 7th. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel on September 5th to learn more about Open House and all of the fun activities happening on the site that day. That's tomorrow on the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk, mornings at 9, right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Excuse me, ma'am, could you repeat that? I didn't understand what you asked. 5:58 on News Radio 92.3. Didn't you just once want a Peanuts character to say that? Just one time. Just stand up for yourselves, man. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Vice President Kamala Harris is expected to announce an economic proposal for small businesses today. She's on the campaign trail in New Hampshire. Hotel workers.
A big cut, by the way, in taxes for small business startups from a deduction of $5,000 to $50,000 to incentivize what she says is like 7 million new small businesses. They did 18 million in the Biden administration. She wants to hit 25 in her administration. So interesting proposal.
Absolutely. Hotel workers around the country threatening to expand their strike after union and hotel companies did not reach a contract deal. About 10,000 people were on the picket lines at various hotels over the Labor Day weekend, and the hotel chains affected include the Hilton, Hyatt, and the Marriott.
All right, very good, David. And by the way, on the whole proposal that Kamala Harris is going to roll out today, you always have to ask yourself, what would you say about it if it had been proposed by a Republican? You would say it's great. So, it's a good plan, as far as I understand it. Don't be caught up in all of that.
Listen on air at 92. 92-